Hello there, Verbal Shenanigans fans, listeners. When was the last time you had a real challenge in your fantasy sports league? Are you bored with the stale and mundane redraft league year after year? DynastySportsEmpire.com understands, and that's why they are the nation's leading dynasty league management company. Building a team from scratch is easy, but building a dynasty takes skill. Manage your roster with the same players, compete against the same teams, build fun, exciting rivalries for years. DynastySportsEmpire.com fantasy baseball season is heating up and leagues are now forming for the upcoming season. Visit them online at DynastySportsEmpire.com to start building your future franchise today. Must be 18 years or older to join. Rules may apply, but that is DynastySportsEmpire.com. We have a fantastic episode for you today. I'm excited to bring it to you, so strap on in.
Hey, this is Tammy Lane. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans, and more shenanigans will be happening later.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to another intriguing, enticing 90 minutes of audible candy, if you will, aka the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Mike, how are you doing this week?
Well, I'm a little worried if I have to entice for a full 90 minutes.
You're contractually like 10 minutes of enticing is your contract.
Yeah, I mean, that's my go-to. Like, I'm a closer. Like, you just basically said to your closer, hey, go throw nine innings. It's like, nah, coach, I got, like, two pitches, and hopefully we'll get out of the first.
So essentially what I asked, I just asked, like, Mariano Rivera to start a game, is what you're saying.
Well, technically he was a starter.
He was.
In the beginning.
So you're saying, like, you're giving me 10 minutes, but it's so good that the other, you know, usually these are about an hour and a half. The other 120 minutes, no, sorry. The other 70 minutes, 75 to 80 minutes are just garbage time.
Well, I got to be honest, the 10 I'm going to give you aren't going to be that incredible either. But, I mean, at least they'll be like sea level where it's like, all right, that's passing.
Right.
The rest of it's going to just be pure garbage. Like, I would dare say just go right to the interview this week, people.
So you're kind of like Billy Wagner when he was on the Mets. Like, he just didn't quite, like, he was okay. He had some really good shining moments, and you've had a few, you know, and but the rest of it was kind of like average at best.
Yeah, like if you say, hey Mike, go beat the Cincinnati Reds, it's like, yeah, that's no problem. Then it's like, all right, we got a big weekend series, we're going to try to get into first place. I'm good, coach. I'm taking a break.
Yeah.
I know you're spotting a 3-run lead, but you know what? Not my style. Too much pressure on me. Let me give up 4 home runs.
Well, that's Mike, everyone. He's good for 10 minutes to show. Our guests are usually good for like 30, 40. So the rest is, you know, I guess you're stuck with me. And I'm Scott. But you're tuning into the Verbal Shenanigans here. So welcome if you're new. Welcome to the old listeners. Mike, a very slow news week again in America. Really slow.
Yeah. I mean, this is coming out,
this Monday. Will be on Monday. So, yep.
Okay, so we'll still be with the same guy for Monday.
Maybe.
Tentatively.
Yeah.
Tentatively. But then we got a new guy after that. Okay. So, yeah, we're dragging our feet, you know. I mean, I think this is... What people forgot was in the Mayan calendar, 2020 was actually like 19 months long.
Ah.
Somebody should have really researched that. So we're still on track for 2021 to be great. It's just another 8 months away or so. Yeah.
It's funny because we record this a couple days before we release it. And I'm almost like sometimes tentative right now to talk about current events because it's like by 4 days from now, it's like something completely different is like the hot, you know, the hot topic. Like, obviously, this week now we have the president is impeached again and kicked off of Twitter. I don't think he was kicked off quite as of yet last week. I know. I think last week we were talking about the riots had just happened. So I'm not sure he was officially banned from Twitter at that point. But interesting times, man. Interesting times when you step outside of it all and you kind of look at it and you think about it like, wow, the president of the United States is silenced by a American company. like think about what has had, a lot of companies now. Now they're just all piling on. But think about what has had to have happened to lead us all the way there. It's kind of crazy, you know. It's like, first, we had to have a guy who used to host The Apprentice get in, and then he had to get the right people to do something. Then an awful event needed to happen, and then a bunch of other events. Like, it's just weird to think about where we're currently at.
It's weird when it's news when the president's kicked off a TikTok. Mm-hmm. Because I got to be honest, like, if they didn't ban him, that'd be so awesome if he could only like speak to us in 10-second intervals while he's dancing like that.
Yeah.
Then I would be, I would get front row for a Trump rally in that scenario. That'd be epic, like, beyond words.
Like if he had to call out the radical left, but then shake his ass for like a good, 30 seconds or whatever it is.
He talks about the radical left and he just keeps on moving that one butt cheek and all on the left hand side and all. Oh, man, look at that radical left, not stable like old righty.
He's like, I refuse to let this election go to the left, to the left, to the left. It's a little scary times, too. Like, how do you feel on the whole? Like, I think he's we've been through this a million times. No one's really here to kind of listen to our political thing. But, I think he's a complete douche, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I do see the other side where it's a little scary that voices can be, because it's not just the president. They have like eliminated, like, I don't know, of reading something and listening to 30,000 conspiracy theories, QAnon accounts, followers accounts. They've kind of zapped them all, and then almost as a massive conglomerate,
Expedits.
All these other companies pile up, boop, 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 all of a sudden completely blockaded from kind of one side. Yeah, maybe a little extreme on one side, but to me it's there's a little set, like, we don't need to like focus right now on like what an idiot the president is. That's kind of like old hat at this point, but it is a little scary that like that whole side can kind of be like Thanos'd, on social media, boom, gone. And then they all just go whoosh, and it's like a wave.
Yeah, like the stuff they're doing, like Parler, that I'm kind of like on the fence on, where I'm like, it's like, okay, they had their own platform, and everybody knows it's like, all right, this is some crazy stuff going on that platform, so I don't really understand like why there's a whole, well, we can't let people get to it and whatever. It's like a weird situation where I'm like, I don't think if anybody's in back saying, well, I got to get some news and goes on to Parler, just by that alone, you're like, all right, we weren't going to save you anyway. So, right. So be it. It really makes you kind of think of like all of a sudden, like I totally understand what's going on. Like when you're basically saying a leader of the free world caused a riot where people went into a building and I will say, quote unquote, supposedly try to go kidnap people, yeah, or possibly, as I heard, the noose was for Pence, apparently. I don't.
All right.
I've heard that. I haven't read any stories to conglomerate that story, but it is kind of a weird time where you get the side of the right where it's like, we're for freedom of speech or whatever. And at the same time, you're like, but yeah, you're kind of pushing you're trying to force down an untruth.
Yeah.
And it's not even like, I heard this is true, but you guys can have your own. It's literally like, you are an idiot unless you do not understand the QAnon process.
Yeah. I don't know. Because right. You look at, you kind of look how things have flipped, right? It used to be like the liberals were fighting for free. You think of all the was it Two Life Crew? Yeah, yeah. They were fighting for, you know, free speech and in music and all this, and the conservatives were, you know, shutting it down back in the day, like Tipper Gore and all that stuff or whatever it was. And then,
oh yeah, when Dee Schneider went to Congress and right. He basically put I remember that because he put Al Gore in the spot where he was like reading out some lyrics. I forget what the song was, but basically it was about, he was saying, oh, this is all sexual and ever. And he's like, no, I know the guy. The song's about his appendicitis and his surgery. So if you're like looking for sex stuff, I don't know what to tell you about your wife right there.
Right. But that's kind of what I'm saying, right? You notice how like over the years, some like values have kind of, you know, turned on their side now. The Republicans are crying, you know, free speech and uncensored. You know, that's what worries me. If one side can control so much of the narrative, like all the tech, they keep, you know, big tech is kind of, you know, they've capitalized, and the Democrats have really learned to work. It's no secret. Let's not be stupid. Like, even if you're a Democrat, you know that Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, you know, they lean slightly left, you know, like, you know, it's not, you're not seeing as many conservative voices out there. And it's a little scary to me to think that Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and who's the guy that owns Twitter? I forget his name.
Donnie Twits.
Yeah, Donnie Twits. Yeah.
Oh, Donnie Twits, man. He going on his Twitter.
Like, a little scary to me that they can control that narrative so easily with, like I said, a snap of the fingers, and it's like, whoosh, everything's gone. And listen, I am no conservative by any means. It just, I also think conservatives should have a voice, because I think for every crazy conservative, there's a crazy radical left guy all the way on the other side. So, a little, to me, it's a little frightening in a way.
Yeah, I will say I'm surprised at how quickly that all turned around. It was one thing to kind of say, okay, we had to shut down Trump because he's literally
right.
Pushing a narrative which is causing violence, and so far I can see that we're like, all right, there's a cult leader right there. When they magically got rid of the 50 some odd thousand after that, I'm like, how'd you have that number so fast?
Yeah,
you know what kind of deals, like, were you just ready to press the button kind of I have no issue. I think I would not have an issue if they didn't do the thing with Parler where it's like now impossible to just like go on your phone and get it. If people want to do that and they call that their source, so be it.
Right.
Everybody understands what that is. But if you're blocking everything, then you're getting that, okay, now we're starting to be like those narratives that they talk about.
Right. And it comes down to, like, you know, you don't want any side, if you will, having too much power. Cause that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what we fight against anyway, to kind of, you know, checks and balance, and they just completely own the social media. I was listening to a podcast today. Shout out to the Reply All podcast. Really good podcast. They were talking about what was interesting is, like, you know, people go to Twitter and Facebook and think, like, for, you know, you believe you have some kind of privacy, right? Like, if Mike, you tweet something stupid, you have the ability to kind of take it down, right? And people can't. Now, people could have screenshotted it, but you can't go back and kind of find your old dumb tweets if you took them down before people notice, which we see it all the time, right? People, comics get in trouble or whatever, and they go and, you know, try to wipe the memory bank away.
The Washington quarterback, Taylor Heineke, after our amazing story how he almost pulled off the victory, he had to turn off his Twitter because apparently he's a conservative, and he had said a few things where it's like, uh-oh. Mm-mm. I'm kind of rising right now. Can't have that.
I'll tell you, he's not conservative with his running. He was impressive. But so I was listening to the podcast, and what they were saying was, it was pretty interesting. I guess, like, Parler, you know, it wasn't built for so much traffic yet. You know what I mean? Like, Twitter and Facebook could handle bazillions of people going on it and commenting.
They grew at a time.
Yeah.
They didn't all go in like 2 minutes.
Yeah. So it crashed a million times. And also, I guess their memory was kind of like, you know, files are deleted. Like, they're given random codes and whatnot. But, like, apparently Parler was just like sequential. So some guy was able to download like terabytes full of like all these past tweets and comments. So apparently they have thousands and thousands now of evidence of like people planning things and people saying they were going to the riots and people saying crazy. So they have like libraries full of stuff of people kind of like, you know, if they could prove this thing was planned, which you could also say like that might be a way of Trump to kind of get out of this, be like, look, this was before I tweeted or said anything, this was planned way before, you know what I mean? Like there is a defense there. Like, you know, yeah, I said something stupid, but I didn't tell them to do it. They were planning this for months, you know? So I don't know. I don't know. It's pretty interesting though.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you kind of expect that when you're basically going to your 12th option of social media services, you can't be surprised when they have something like that. Like if you're like, we got to go out to eat and your top 11 places are closed, you know, you're going into the 12th one. I'm like, technically this is dinner, but
yeah.
7-Eleven pizza.
I don't know, but I did want to get to, I don't know. Did you hear about this news story? I want to get to one news story before we kind of, bring on our pretty cool guest today. No, very cool guest. sorry, Tammy. We'll get there. So did you hear that about, you're familiar with Bitcoin, right?
Yes.
So Bitcoin, which we all thought was weird and kind of unsecure, and where is this going a couple years ago, as I check my stock app, is currently worth $39,000 per Bitcoin. 39 grand. So did you hear about this programmer that, okay, so let me read the story, even if you heard it or not, because it's just, this sounds like the plot of a modern movie. So, we all had an experience of forgetting a password, but one programmer named Stephen Thomas has lost his password to a hard drive containing $240 million worth of Bitcoin, and he only has 2 password attempts left before he's locked out forever. Thomas was given 7,002 Bitcoins more than 10 years ago for making a video on how the cryptocurrency works. So, Mike, you were coming out with this. You're making a video for me explaining it. You know, you're doing work. At the time, his collection of Bitcoins were worth only a few dollars each, and he decided to store them in an Iron Key digital wallet on a hard drive. He wrote the password to that drive on a piece of paper that he ended up losing, and now his Bitcoin are worth $240 million, and he can't remember what the password is. He tried 8 possible passwords, only has 2 left, or it will encrypt them. The drive will encrypt itself, making the wallet impossible to access. there are those like ex-Facebook security Alex Stamos who have offered to help Thomas unlock the hard drive, but he's asking for a 10% cut. I mean, personally, I'll give you a 10% cut if you can get me this thing. You know, I'll give you, I might give you 20%. There's so many millions in there that I don't have to work a day in my life. There's a fortune. But apparently there's $140 billion worth of Bitcoin either lost or left in wallets that cannot be accessed. Berlo, what do you do in that situation?
That's why my password's always password 123 exclamation point. I mean, I don't know what to I mean, I know everybody's like, well, it's got to be like you go to those programs and like, do you want it X271A colon parentheses, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I'm not going to remember that. And that means I have to save it on my computer, which makes it pointless to begin with.
I think about the stress of when I'm getting like locked out of my electric bill or something and I can't remember the password or the Verizon bill. I can't, you know, imagine the stress of like I don't know, say your password was Berlu 311 and like it was a capital B and you forgot, like, the did I hit shift? Imagine the pressure of hitting that enter button.
I mean, it sounds like the greatest game show. Maybe we just say he can't get any help and we put it on like Fox and he has to do his last 2 tries like on national television.
I'd watch it.
That would be the most epic thing. And like we can all bet on if he gets it on the first try or the second try or gets locked out and all that. That'd be that. I'm talking about UFC pay-per-view money on that one.
Instead of like phoning a friend, he's able to like phone a hacker and get some advice on what it might be, you know, like he can, but he's got to give certain cuts to try to, you know, see how much he's going to give up.
I mean, Bitcoin doesn't have the security question item or any of that stuff. I mean, I don't.
It's crazy.
Well, I guess it's not Bitcoin. It's the drive itself. But it's,
right.
It's a game show. It's a safe bet. Just give 10% to the person who can unlock it and get your money. So what's 10? That's 22 million.
Yeah,
so
it's nothing.
So that's 198 million you still have. I think you'll live.
Exactly. And Bitcoin seems to be just on the, like, it seems like it's just going to keep going up. I mean, your boy over here is also invested in Bitcoin. Would you like to know how much Bitcoin I have, Mike?
Share what kind of cheese you got there, Scotty.
Mike, I got a whopping 0.00017647 Bitcoins, which equates, as of right now, to $69.51.
It's cash. It's.
Let me tell you, if you were like, Scott, you're locked out of your $69.48, I would be like, no, you know, like, I want that. Never mind.
I mean, that's how the game show will start. We'll do to like the minor people who need like the $200 that are in there. Now we'll, you know, come sweep. Then we'll talk to the millionaires and billionaires in that system.
Yeah, it's bizarre, man. I mean, I feel like at that point, I feel like maybe three passwords in, I'd be like, whoa. Like if I knew that 10 was the max, I'd be like, okay, I got to hire somebody or figure something. Like to rifle off 8, like, oh, it was my college dorm, like all these passwords that you used to have, like chili peppers, 92. Yeah.
It's like, well, he was Sam, but I used to call him Sammy and he was a Yerky. So I used to call him the Kai for short. And, What was my 4 digits, my home number when I was in high school? And
like if they could hack into like government systems, someone can hack into a hard drive.
Yeah. Just call Russia. They apparently hack into everything. I hear that in the news every week. It can't be that hard.
I don't know, man. All I know is I'm gonna keep up on this story because I'm very can you imagine losing that much money? That's worse than losing like a lottery ticket because like you did some work for it and it was given to you and you kept it all these years and technically you earned it, you got paid.
He had the long ride gamble. I mean, what'd you say? You started with a few thousand and it's up to that much.
Yeah, it's funny. I was having this conversation today with a friend of mine. I was talking about Dogfish beer for some reason or another, and how they merged with Sam Adams, and I was looking up what the owner of Dogfish got. Stand by. So they merged with Sam Adams, and so he was given 406,000 shares of the Boston Beer Company, which is what Sam Adams is under. At that time, it was valued at $314 a share, and his shareholders were set to receive $173 million in cash. I looked up what a Boston Beer Company share is right now. It is at over $900. So he had tripled his money. Tripled his money from, I think that was only a year or two ago they merged. So I don't know, man. I just look at these stories. I'm like, how do these people make, like, I just feel like I'm always late to everything. Like all these great investment things I'm never in on.
They get right in the right time. Meanwhile, we've been doing this for 7 years, and I'm still waiting for the first check to come in my way.
Yeah, I think I would love to total up. We're probably in the red, I don't know, a couple grand at this point after a couple years between hosting fees and T-shirts I never sold and when Facebook tricks me into paying to market like a post. You know, we had a couple sponsors here and there, but yeah, we're pretty down. So, guys, if you're looking to sponsor our show, Please.
Or if you want us to merge with your podcast and give us shares in your podcast.
Yeah, can
the
we sell shares?
Joe Rogan Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Can we sell shares of the show? That would be cool. I mean, if you want to, give us, we would accept even just one Bitcoin for the show. Just one.
Yeah.
You know.
We would accept a meal for this show, like a good piece of chicken. I'll give up Verbal Shenanigans. You can have my slot.
Yeah, I think we got fed a couple times. We got fed at riding around with Trevor Bain.
Got fed there.
Yep.
I
think we got fed LARPing. I think we got fed.
Yeah,
when we LARPed
fed during LARPing. Okay. Okay. Odd two items that have something in common. Okay.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, we're just tuning in. A couple of years ago, me and Mike went. We went LARP. We tried this Shenanigans Showdown, which was like a challenge in the month of March, and started off really good. I petered out. Berlo started strong, kept going, then kind of petered out. Like, it was just too long, but it was a good concept. Yeah. But one of them was to go LARPing, and we went. We sure enough went LARPing. We dressed up. We got into a battle. I think me and Mike lasted about 30 to 40 seconds each in the battle, and then we were killed. They were like, minus two star, magic, 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 stab, stab, stab. You're dead.
Now, I technically lived. You went up against the big shot of the LARPers and killed yourself, so I had to tell your story,
For the next generation. That is right. I did kind of go head first into battle, but... It was a cool experience. But anyway, time for another cool experience. We got a really cool guest on the show today. She was recommended to me by my guest of the year for 2020, Howard Berger, who works with Greg Nicotero, who you might know from a little show called The Walking Dead. But he's done a whole bunch of other things in the special effects world. And she's a makeup artist who... Oscar winner, has worked on Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and she was a really freaking cool guest. Without further ado, here's our interview with Tammy Lane. How's it going, Tammy?
Yeah, really good. How are you guys?
I'm good. I was just playing around with this Verbal Shenanigans background I have here now. So we're like, we're cool
it's
now.
Kind of floating, yeah. The green screen.
Yeah,
it's
not great. It's not great, but I'm gonna keep it.
It's a nice visual effect as your arm goes in and out of the screen.
Yeah, yeah. I was going for like a 70s green screen kind of vibe. So I'll probably take it off in like 10 seconds. But Tammy, how are you? Thank you so much for joining us for a few minutes.
Oh, well, thanks for having me and asking me to do this. It's good to meet you guys.
Yeah, it was cool because we had Howard Berger on early in the year last year. I don't know exactly what month, and I had been tracking Howard down for, I don't know, it had to be like a year just checking in on Howard. He was always busy doing like... amazing projects and whatnot, and he turned out to be one of the like favorite interviews last year, and kind of kept in touch with him and just sent him an email here and there, and I was like, hey, do you know anybody that would be like a great person to talk to? And you were like the first person he named, so thank you so much for joining us.
That's nice of him. He does great like interviews. He has great stories.
He's awesome.
So.
Okay, so the point is, though, if you let us down, we'll have to call Howard and there'll be a whole situation with him.
Right. Yeah.
Just keep that in mind.
I'll try. I'll keep this up. I'll be making more sense.
So Tammy, I guess like a good place to start is, with so many productions and art and music and you name it, everything kind of being down and affected from this whole pandemic year and whatnot, we started to see little things kind of open up and whatnot. How has your work been completely affected by that as far as being able to do the effects you do and the makeup you do? Has there been productions to work on, or were you shut down?
God, No. It was completely shut down. I had just come off a show in Toronto working for Howard's company called Jupiter's Legacy.
Right.
And I was there for 6 months, and it was a hard show. It was hard, and I just kind of wanted a break. And I was kind of a little burnt out on it, but, you know, but so I came back. I ended up going to Bora Bora for like 10 days, which helped a lot. And I came back, and Howard's like, just take a break, you know. And of course, that's impossible for me because I took another show with another friend, and I worked all of February, and then the shutdown happened because right at the time that I was going back to the show that I was going to be doing with Howard, and I was excited about getting back on this show. It's called The Orville.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the night before we were supposed to start back up, because Howard and I, we did season one and two together, but we took a break from the beginning of season three because we were both on other projects. And then all of a sudden, I call it the great pause. The great pause happened. Yeah. Like life just shut down. So I spent 52 days in my apartment here in LA. I drank everything until my liver said no more. I ate all the food until my stomach said no more.
Yeah.
And I ended up going to Illinois. I have a lake house in Illinois near where I grew up. And I just went there for 5 months, and I had the best COVIDcation ever.
Yeah. That's my vibe right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it made me reset. It helped me reset. It made me miss makeup. Well, I never really stopped loving makeup, but it made me miss it a lot more than what I thought I, you know. And I just got rejuvenated. So here we are in the back end of it, starting back up on Orville again in about a week with Howard.
Oh, there you go.
And life is fantastic.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, like in this whole break, are you able to like practice stuff or like work on some stuff? You're like, I was thinking of this design or whatever, or is it pretty much if you don't have a human beside you, you can't really play around with stuff?
Well, I paint a lot and I do a lot of things. Makeup is just kind of a, like I have an art degree. I went to school, I was an art major, and I do a lot of painting and stuff like that, and drawing and sketching. And so it kind of, the whole break kind of gave me a moment to go back to that and start doodling again, basically, because, I don't know. It just kind of, I fell in love with a few things that I forgot I used to do. I even joined Fender Play because I always wanted to learn guitar.
There you go. Yeah.
Ooh.
I used to be a musician. I was a trumpet player when I was younger, but I just wanted to try guitar. And so I can only play three chords still, but at least that's three chords more than I could before.
A lot of bands can only play three chords, and they are legendary. So,
yes. True.
So, were you a kid who, when was your first exposure to even like, I mean, getting into like the special effects makeup thing? Were you a kid who was like interested in this stuff early on, or did you like go to art school and find your way there somewhere else?
I was a kid that I was always interested in monsters.
Nice.
And I don't know why. Like the first movie I saw in a movie theater was Star Wars in 1978. And I remember it. I was born in 74. So I was only 4 years old. And my mother even says, we took you to that when you were that little. And you did a lot of things that you do in the 70s that you don't do now. But I saw that, and I just saw like creatures and monsters and weird people and weird things. And
well, you're in the right place today. You're.
Yeah. I that was the beginning of my geekdom, I guess. Anyway, I the thing was, is I'm not a horror movie fan. I love Exorcist and The Howling and, just the early stuff, but it wasn't why I liked. And I didn't actually realize I like makeup effects. I just like to draw. And so I started like drawing aliens, and I love drawing Draculas and Frankensteins. And cartoon characters. And I don't know, I didn't realize how much I loved it until I actually came to LA and met other people that actually love it and do monsters as a living, you know? And I didn't realize I probably would have because I'm from Peoria, Illinois, and I mean, Hollywood might as well have been Mars, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. So was that like, did you just like head out like blind to LA, or did you have like an opportunity to go out there?
No, so I was in Illinois. I went to school at Bradley University, which is a tiny liberal arts college. And I went on a softball scholarship, and I didn't know what to major in. And I was in senior year of high school, and my boyfriend broke up with me. So I was sitting in calculus class, and I was just drawing. I was mad, angry, drawing this like devil thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the calculus teacher, Ms. Canty, she was going around like in between the desks, like lecturing about matrices or some bullshit like that. And she came behind me and whipped up my notebook. And I thought, oh, I'm in trouble because I'm not paying attention. And she just sat it back down in front of me. And she goes, did you ever consider going into art?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
No, never. I was going to go into physical therapy because I was in athletics and I wanted to do something with athletics.
Yeah,
I thought. And so I came home that night and I told my parents, hey, I'm going to major in art. And so my parents were like, oh, okay, honey, you know, pat me on the head, yeah, thinking, because, yeah, you know, how many times do you change your major as a freshman, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I stuck with it. And so what happened was, well, during high school and in college, I was involved in community theater in my hometown. And a lot of haunted houses. So I got into makeup because a guy I worked with at the community theater loved haunted houses. So he taught me how to do zombies and all that out of the kit stuff just for fun. And I loved it, you know, and so I just, you know, I just thought it was a bit of fun. And so then when I was a senior, I was going to school, I was going to get this art degree in graphic design. And a friend, I realized about halfway through my senior year, first semester, that I hate computers a lot.
Yeah.
So the last thing that I needed to do was like, you know, go into a workforce on a computer. And so my friend, we went out to a bar on a Wednesday night called Desperados, and she told me about, I cried to her about, oh my God, I'm going to graduate with this degree. I don't want to do this degree. And
I feel like so many people have cried in Desperados before.
Yeah, it's true. It's such a true story. It was ladies' night too. So it was free, and it was 85-cent drafts. So, so she told me about this class that went out to LA through the communications school. That went out to LA to just to learn about anything Hollywood, like, and it was all spectrums from props to graphic arts to producing. We met Henry Winkler, and she said, well, you're interested in that like monster makeup stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but that's a hobby. And she goes, well, they're touring a makeup effects studio. And I was like, really? And so she was telling me about it. So that Friday, I went in during this professor's office hours into his office, and I asked how I could get to go onto this class trip. There was like 60 applicants, and he could only like take 10 people, five guys, five girls. So he put people that wanted to go through like a rigorous, like kind of a weird psychology kind of thing, and he got to pick. And I just went in there and said, I don't give a shit about the other stuff. I just hear you're going to see where like where they make monsters. Huh. And I've never seen the ocean. And he was just like, you're in.
I mean, it sounds like you're lucky. Like you had a couple educators that like actually encouraged you to like, you know, seek your path. You know, I feel like it could have been squashed so quickly if you had the wrong, you know, the wrong people just like, nah, it's, you know, you're not allowed, or stop doodling in your notebook, focus. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I also had another teacher in high school, Mary Jo Papich, who is the band instructor, and she was incredibly encouraging in the arts. She was the one that introduced me to the theater. When I went to her in high school and I was in sports and I was one of those overachieving kids, my dad worked at the high school. He was the baseball coach and PE teacher. And so, like, I just needed something outside school where I could get escape. And this band instructor that I had, I asked her about, she was musical director of a show called Sweet Charity at Peoria Players. And so I asked, I go, can you introduce me? I'm interested in doing behind the scenes stuff, like being part of the crew. Painting sets and whatever they needed. So she introduced me. So that was kind of the beginning of the whole theater thing. And that was when I was 16 years old. And then, but jumping back to like this college, trip that I ended up getting to go on, we ended up touring K&B Effects Studio, which is how I met Howard Berger.
Wow. Okay.
So let's go through the journey a little more here. So from that tour to, let's say, your first job, which I believe was Wishmaster, if I read IMDb right?
No.
Nope?
I mean, I was on Wishmaster. So what happened was, I 2 weeks after I graduated at Bradley, me and five of my closest friends caravanned out to L.A., right? So I kept calling Howard. I kept calling Howard to try to get in, and I kept getting, like, he's in a meeting or he's on set or whatever. It was becoming obvious he was avoiding me a bit.
He did that to me too, until I emailed him 4,000 times.
Well, the funny thing, I mean, he'll eventually get to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But anyway, he called me. It was like the day before my birthday, and he goes, hey, are you still looking for work? And he goes, well, we got this big movie, the biggest movie we've ever done, and I just need a grunt worker to work in the shop, sweep floors and do whatever. And that was Spawn.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So because of that, that was a huge movie for them. So they brought in all these incredible artists. So I'm just there. I know nothing. I'm just learning, epoxy is, and different kinds, types of clay, and ooh, don't soak your hands in that chemical. You'll melt your skin off, type shit. Yeah. And anyway, I just started working in the shop, and because of all these amazing artists that worked there, plus being the only girl in the shop kind of helped a bit. Because they're like, hey, come over here. I want to show you something, wink, wink, And I got to, see sculpting tricks and painting tricks. And so I just, my education restarted there. And I just worked my ass off to, because I had really good teachers and mentors there as well.
So I guess, what gets you to, the next, is it just show you stuff, and they get you into a job, or is it like an audition process when you get to a movie?
Well, so everything's different. Everything is everybody's journey is different. Nobody's journey is the same. Right. Before I got a job at working at K&B with Howard, I met a guy in a bar that was the UCLA foreman, for the UCLA opera, and he needed a set painter. And that's how I got my first job in LA. And I would do that on the weekends for cash under the table. But so everybody, it's different. So with Howard getting in there, I just kind of worked and worked and worked, and I worked hard. And actually his business partner, Greg Nicotero, he got a movie in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And he was taking a small crew with him. And he asked if I would be interested in going for a week and help them set up their trailers and whatever. And so I'm like, of course. So 1 week turned into 2 weeks. And then he asked me what I ultimately wanted to do. And I said, well, I want to do makeup on set. And he goes, well, we have seven vampires, because it was John Carpenter's Vampires was the movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We have seven vampires and we need to make up. There's only three of us. If you can take two, that means we can come to work at 6:30 in the morning instead of 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So they trained me. They taught me how to do, and again, amazing artists on that show. And they taught me how to airbrush makeup and how to tricks to do veining and different how to just manipulate the paint on so it didn't look makeup-y and how to all sorts of technical shit. So I ended up staying for the entire show, which was like nearly 3 months in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And that was back in 1997. And I'd been working at K&B for a little less than a year at that point. So when that show was over, we came back, you know, they put me back in the shop because they're loyal. Like those guys are, if you're loyal to them, they'll be loyal to you. Mm-hmm. And so they just kept hold of me. And I guess because I was cheap enough. I did make 70% less than the average male back then, but you know, sad but true, but you know, whatever. But I didn't know that much, so I figured $7 an hour was awesome.
Yeah. So take us to the process from, okay, you're learning on the job, you're doing Spawn, you're doing John Carpenter, you know, Vampire, you know, you're in these big productions. When does your, like, do you finally get that little like hand of control to being like kind of like the head of, like, you go on to do some amazing things, which we'll get to in a few minutes, but when do you finally get like your own production, like your own, you know, all right, Tammy's in charge of like all the makeup. Like, when do you finally become a master, if you will, or a, you know, a leader and like respected enough to be able to handle a movie like that? What was your first kind of break?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that was my first break, because then that led me to, being a part of that, you know, when we came back, Howard was going to do a movie in Europe, in Luxembourg, and he was asking Greg who he should take, and Greg Nicotero immediately said me. So that's what happened. I got to go on that. So that kind of was the introduction to Howard and I's relationship. So he entrusted me. So I did that show with him. And then just through the years, he just entrusted me with certain shows that he would send me off to on my own. And I got to do like a bunch of great things with them. But then, but I was still kind of working a lot in the shop. And then they laid me off, unbeknownst to me, just out of the blue. I'll never forget it. It was a Wednesday and I got called into the office and they just laid me off. Like, they said, Friday will be your last day.
Wow.
And I just moved into my very own apartment, no roommates, in Los Angeles, which is hard to do. And I started to freak out. So Thursday night, I'm at home, and this is pre-cell phones. So my home phone, my landline rings at like 11 o'clock at night on a Thursday, and it's Richard Taylor from What a Workshop down in New Zealand. And he basically called to offer me a job. And he was like, we need another makeup effects person. You know, you come recommended by Howard Berger, and when can you get here? And I went, oh,
wow.
All my shit was still in boxes in the apartment that I was worrying about how I was going to pay for.
Wow.
Because I just moved in. So it turns out that because Richard Taylor and Howard, I had met Richard before because I went to New Zealand with Howard for Xena and Hercules episodes as well. And he had basically told Richard to hire me. So they came up with this plan. They came up with this plan to fire me from K&B because Howard knew that because I was too loyal, I would probably say no to the job, which he was right. I wouldn't have. And so since I had no job and this person is calling me from New Zealand, offered me 15 months on a job.
Wow.
Amazing.
Imagine you just ignored your phone that whole week. Like, I'm so depressed. I'm not picking it up.
Filing unemployment. Stop calling me.
Well, the funny thing was, is like, then Richard was like, so when can you get here? And I said, 2 weeks. And he went, oh, no. We want it sooner than that. And I said, well, what were you thinking of? And he went, 4 days. And I went, how about 7? And he goes, 5. And I said, done. And then within 5 days,
wow.
I put stuff in storage and I boarded a plane, which what I thought was going to be 15 months. And it ended up being 6 years.
Holy crap. Jeez. Wow.
Wow, that's so, a crazy story.
Yeah. So when I went to New Zealand and for Lord of the Rings, and I just, it was more of an education, and I just got, and then I got put in charge down while down there. I get put in charge of things like within that department and different units and stuff. And I started, just while I was in New Zealand, just, you know, cause we had like 8 units going, and then there was all these creatures. And then I was doing the Gimli stunt double forever.
Wow. When you get to like a film, like the Lord of the Rings, is that like, makeup, like heaven, like you get a project that size? Is that like the Bonnaroo of makeup artists? Like that has to be like, holy crap. This is unbelievable.
To this day, it's still my favorite project.
Yeah.
To this day. You will never, ever, ever repeat what that was, because at that time in New Zealand film was only New Zealand film, or TV, which was Xena, Hercules, and The Piano. Like, there was nothing famous that actually really came out, even though there was they had their own TV shows and movies, and they had that, but they just didn't have that. And in fact, a lot of the crew on Lord of the Rings, the Kiwi crew, it was their first movie. A lot of stunt guys, they answered an ad in the paper. Are you athletic?
Wow.
That's great.
You know? Yeah, and they trained, and these stunt professionals came down and like trained a bunch of guys, and now they're like all over the world now, like number one, like stunt coordinators for James Bond movies. And
that's
shit.
So awesome.
So what's your typical day when you're working on a set like that? Is it just like the preliminary, getting everybody in their makeup and letting them go, or do you stay like on set for touch-ups? How's that kind of work?
So our day, we come in usually a half an hour before our victims or actors come in. we set up, we have coffee, and that's usually anywhere between the hours of 3:30 and 5 in the morning.
Nice.
Later on, we'll get to The Hobbit, but that was always at 3:30 in the morning. I get to work at 3. Our first person would be in the chair at 4 a.m., and then usually makeups take between an hour and 15 to 2.5 hours, depending on what the makeup is. But my longest makeup was a 10.5 hour makeup.
Oh my God.
Full body, 27 pieces. And there was 3 of us. So
who was the victim for that, by the way? Like who had to endure that?
It was a birthing Uruk-hai at the beginning of the Two Towers movie.
Oh, man.
Where Saruman like makes their Uruk-hai, and they're in birthing sacks, and they're like in these sacks. Mm-hmm. So we made up this contortionist that could bend his body like literally in a pretzel ball.
Oh my God.
And so then when he like came out, and so it's all like, you know, we started at midnight and got him on set by 10:30.
Jeez. I guess you gotta be a great conversationalist to get through that with somebody and all. Cause there can't be a boring makeup person, or they would be living through.
you got to have like a little barber shop in you. You know,
oh, there's so much banter; it's unbelievable. I wish we would have had taped some of this or video.
It's funny because you brought that up, and the other day, me and my wife were watching the Mandalorian or whatever, and I was like, oh, you know, like, or the behind the scenes of that, and they were doing the makeup, and I was like, you. How cool would it be to be like, you know, in that or made up? I'm like, do you think you can do it? Like be one of those aliens or whatever for so long. We were both kind of like, the opportunity would be amazing, but I don't know if I could I'm like a fidgety kind of like, I can't stay still kind of person. Like, do you guys like eliminate people? Like as far as casting, like who can, like you cast people who can handle that amount of, like makeup work and set, like, is that part of
that
the
doesn't matter?
No,
that doesn't matter. I mean, honestly, it's, if that's the performance they want, that's, then
they
we
know what
just
they're getting
have
into.
To suck it up and deal with making it work. Like, for instance, you know, it's no secret John Rhys-Davies hated the makeup, right? on Lord of the Rings is Gimli. He like talks a lot about it, but I'm not going to say he perpetuates falsities. I just think he just needs like, there's just a lot of like, you know, we try to make them comfortable.
Right.
We're very susceptible to like their isms, like if they're fidgety, if they, whatever. I mean, one day, we had this person we made up as an orc, and it was like 4 a.m. and he was just dead asleep, and he was a fidgety guy, and I was making up his hand. Another guy was making up his hand because he's fidgety. There's 3 of us on him to get it done as fast as possible.
Interesting.
But it still, he twitched and stuck his own hand to his face.
That would be me.
and we had to go, no, we had to grab him and like gently, like, because we didn't have another face, and he was pulling off like almost and we were just trying to release the, because the base glue is a glue base on the face and hand, so
the Lord of the Rings wouldn't be the same.
Grishnak would have been like, oh my lord, you know.
All right, we can only shoot him from the left. Let's put that in the script.
Pretty much. Put the screen, right? So, just, you know, just different people have different isms. But, you know, everybody wants to hear the horror story.
Yeah.
And Lord knows I got a couple. But honestly, there's only 3 people I've ever worked with that should never wear prosthetics again, just for their own mental and an artist's mental thing. But we made it work. I mean, we, you know, there's a dance you do to, you know, distract them or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So when did, how on earth did a girl who never really thought of doing this go from drawing pictures on her notebook to being nominated for an Oscar? We've had a couple Grammy artists on here, Mike, right? We had a Nobel Prize winner, but I don't know, have we had an Oscar?
I guess Howard.
Oh, Howard. Yeah. But how, what an accomplishment that was, and what did that mean to you? Like, did you ever imagine in a million years that was a thing?
No, because I mean, because I won with Howard Berger, and it was for Narnia, Chronicles of Narnia.
Yep.
And because after Lord of the Rings finished, because that ended up being a 4-year project, I ended up staying in New Zealand because I loved it. I became a permanent resident and later a citizen, and I loved it. And so when Howard got Narnia and it happened to be being filmed in New Zealand, he called me up and he goes, hey, would you like to work together again? And he hired me to, you know, be his key on Narnia. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I had no idea that where that was going to lead, you know, later, like down the road to a nomination. Like, I just love doing fantasy makeup. And I was working with my best friend. So to me, I was a win-win. Like, there was no way I thought it was ever going to, I thought, you don't think of that. Like, you don't, when you take a project, you don't think about winning awards or anything, you know, even though Lord of the Rings won awards and I was on that makeup team and they won twice. But I mean, I was good enough for that. I mean, those guys came back from the Academy Awards with little bitty Oscars that they cleaned out the Hollywood souvenir shops to give all the people that worked on the makeup effects crew a little, I still have it,
That's awesome.
One of those little plastic things.
So cool.
So yeah, I didn't realize. And then after we finished Narnia, Howard went back to LA. I still stayed in New Zealand until the kind of the work dried up. And then like a year later or 2 years later, he said, hey, are you ready to come home? And I'm like, sure. And we've been working on and off ever since.
It's amazing.
Awesome. I know we're coming up on time, but I guess the weirdest, looking through IMDb, the most interesting thing I could see in there, you were an animal trader for Mighty Wind?
Nope, that's not true.
No?
No, and I thought
I think that's the second time IMDb screwed me up on an interview.
IMDb, is not a good source. I've tried to go in and take that off, but they said, oh, well, you can't. And I'm like, I'm not the animal. There is a Tammy animal trainer, but it's like a different name that kind of sounds like mine, but
I just see you like making a prosthetic.
You're like, I make animals. You go,
all right, Fido, now if you don't do this, this ain't going to scare you.
Yeah, no, I wish I could train animals, but no.
So, you know, we come first full circle here. What are you working on now? And like, what could fans of yours or people listening to, like, where can we see your work next? Where is it going to appear?
Well, I'm waiting for Jupiter's Legacy to come out. I'm very proud of that show. Of course, I went to represent K&B, but I kind of like took care of things on set in Toronto for them. But I'm really excited for that to come out. We're doing reshoots in the next week or so, COVID willing.
Right.
And hopefully it'll come out. And then we're starting back on the Orville. I did some work on the Jeff Bridges show. It's called The Old Man, okay, which isn't out yet, but I think that's going to be on FX and Hulu. But unfortunately, we had to shut down because poor Jeff, you know, he's dealing with lymphoma at the moment. No, so, but I was doing a likeness makeup on his younger version. So I was doing like prosthetic nose and character makeup on an actor named Bill Heck to make him resemble or look like Jeff Bridges back in the Stargate days.
Interesting. So it's interesting because, like, I was telling you, I was watching the Mandalorian with my wife, and she just started getting into, you know, we watched the Star Wars movies, the new ones. She really liked them, and we watched, she kind of got into the old trilogies, and it was like, we got into a conversation about, like, the practical effects, and that's what kind of makes it, you know, kind of makes that movie special, you know, it's the puppets and whatnot. And then, you know, she went on to watch the prequels, and I didn't say anything, and she's kind of like, oh, you know, there was a lot of like CGI and it didn't have the same aesthetic and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this amazing appreciation coming back now for practical effects and using like the CGI where necessary, but I don't think you can ever replace the artwork and the practical effects and the interaction with humans with a green screen. I mean, look at my green screen. This is kind of what...
Where's your puppet?
do you feel that way? Like, do you feel like there is kind of a turn going back the other way? Because I do.
Yeah, well, I do remember when Jurassic Park came out and that T-Rex, the way it looked, you know, because it was part puppet and part CG and people were scared that, oh no, our jobs are going to be, it's the technology is going to overtake us. And it did for a while, but it proved to be dog shit because people were like, oh, that's CG. Yeah. I mean, I feel that way about Marvel. Like, I can't watch a Marvel movie because to me, it's too cartoony. I'd rather watch New Hope instead.
Yeah.
Say all the lines. And, you know, I love Mandalorian because, you know, Grogu is a puppet, and I mean, my friends made that.
I will tell you, I liked it, The Mandalorian. I thought it was really good, but the behind the scenes 8-part series they put out, to me, it was almost better than the show. I was blown away by it. Yeah. It was really.
Yeah, no, I love it because of all the artists that I work with and all that. Like we've kind of gotten a reboot. Like puppets are back, and you know, I work with Seth MacFarlane right now on Orville, and he's really, he wants puppets and he wants as much practical makeup as possible because he doesn't like the look of, you know, a lot of CG stuff and you can't fool an audience anymore, you know? And, you know, there's always that retro feel as well. Like, oh, well, it's puppet, but man, there's just something tangible about being able to actually see the hairs on Baby Yoda's head, or there's like, you know, they're fighting a monster, and yeah, it's a guy in a rubber suit. We get that, and I'm all for like CGI being an accessory to practical,
right?
But absolutely. never a replacement.
Yeah. Well, you're carrying the flag forward, Tammy. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I would love to have you on again and talk more about everything. Maybe have you on later in the year again when your projects start to come out and whatnot. Tammy, if people want to check out your work or follow you or see what's going on, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, the funny thing is I don't actually put my work on social media.
Wow. Okay.
At the moment, I know.
So just the Verbal Shenanigans page. That's the best.
Just wait till your next episode. If you want
yeah,
to hear more.
I mean, you know, I used to. Yeah, that's the thing. I just kind of, I'm very low profile online. I do occasionally on Instagram. We'll post something. So, okay. But it's mostly my cat. You know.
So you're an animal trainer. You lied to me.
Yeah, well, here's hey, Halo, sleep. Good girl. Good.
Tammy.
I can do that too.
Yeah.
Oh God, this is gonna become like a weird cat Zoom now.
I know.
All right, let me go get my dog. Now, Tammy, thank you so much for your time. Stay safe out there. You're a phenomenal guest, and we really appreciate talking to you.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike, Tammy Lane. Tammy Lane is in my hand.
I'm really thinking she held back on the animal training, Scott.
Yeah.
I got to be honest with you. I feel it's like, the like little dirty secret where she's like, how'd you find out about it? Damn you, IMDb.
Yep. Like we were talking before, like that was like some kind of hack that they found out, and she was like, I didn't want anybody to know, you know. But you dug it out.
Yeah.
She didn't want to admit it.
How'd he find out about the pigeons? Damn it.
Could you do the makeup thing for like the 13-hour shift? I was thinking about that. Like I was having this conversation with my wife, like I would not be a great candidate for that. I would not be like as cool as much as I would love to do it. And I probably could do it if, you know, I had the experience. They're like, hey, Scott, you want to be the next Lord of the Rings movie? You know, damn what? Or you want to be a zombie on The Walking Dead? Which I'm thinking is, after this interview, me and you are pretty much shoo-ins. You just basically got to drive over like what, an hour or two?
Yeah. That's easily an hour and a half. I'll be right there.
Yeah. I
mean, you got to take a flight.
That's fine. That's fine.
But on the way there, I have a route where I can go by the Atlanta airport, so it'll work out.
Mm. Pick me right up. 13 hours of makeup. We're in the walk. Like, would you be good at that? I don't know, man. I'm just.
I think it would be decent. I think my biggest problem would be trying almost be conversational back to them every day for 13 hours. You know what I mean? Like, I think I could live sitting in the chair, but
yeah,
I know I'm probably, like, as they're trying to do stuff and they're trying to brighten up their day, I'm sure I'll peter out after, like, day two, where it's like, no, I don't want to retell a story.
See, yeah, like, fine. That shows, like, the motivation, right? Because you got to do all that, and then you got to bring that energy to the set. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's got to be a trait that, like, I was trying to say, like, you know, like, That's got to go around, like, you know, like you have like a doctor's chart and they put notes in, like that's got to go around. Like Mike's great in the chair, brings the energy. You know what I mean? Like, I find it hard to believe like they'd cast someone and be like, oh, he's never set in the chair and he's not great with this, you know. So I don't know. I would love to do it once, but I think I would have a hard time during it.
But can you imagine like being in that chair for like 10, 13 hours and then you go out to set and they're like, lighting's not good today. All right, we'll try it tomorrow.
Yeah. Rain. There's rain. It was an outdoor scene. Can't do it today. You know? It's tough, but what a cool guest. She was awesome.
Easily. Great guest.
All right, Mike. I'm looking forward to it because I think I know what's coming. It's kind of a tradition here on the show. What do we got?
Scott, it's our yearly event. I think this is our fifth year doing this.
Yeah. Well,
I think it's a good time doing this and all, where when the year ends, we look at back at all the people we lost last year and we let you, Scott, be the god and decide who comes back to the planet.
Yeah.
A little game I'd like to call God Complex, Scott.
Can we go over some of the past winners?
I'm trying to.
I know.
Kimbo. John Glenn was the first one. He beat out Kimbo Slice.
Oh, you know, thinking back, I kind of want to. I want to reverse. I want to talk to Kimbo Slice still. But didn't Tom Petty win one year?
Tom Petty beat out Prince 1 year. That year was horrible, where it was like, literally, it's like, let's just get to the finals. Like, every person I gave up, you're like, why are you telling me about
Wait, person? So what you're saying is that year, not enough people died for you?
Not enough interesting people. It's like, we weren't really sad that year.
Yeah, what
and I mean, on a side note, talking about Tom Petty, did you see, like, Tanya Roberts?
Yes.
She did the exact same thing. Well, actually, she lived after this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tom Petty, we heard he died, like, we were talking about on air. And then when we stopped recording, we got the news, oh, wait, he's not dead. And then like 3 hours later, he's like, okay, he's dead.
I'm like when we talked to Lenny Dykstra and he told us Darren, he gave a eulogy for Darren Dalton. And Darren Dalton wasn't dead yet.
Yeah,
go check out that episode. But yeah.
It's like 2 months away.
I can't remember the other winners. But all right, Mike, let's fire away.
Fire away? All right.
How many entrants? How many total entries do we have this year?
I did 32 to keep it simple.
Yep.
And the good news is if I give you somebody, you're literally like, I have no idea who that is. I have a list of others, so sneak in there. In the worst case.
So you have substitutes.
Yep. Mm. Yep, just in case. So it's got A, B, C, or D.
I'm going to go with the D bracket.
D bracket. Okay. This is our... when I go quote-unquote other bracket, as in they're not sports, they're not music.
Okay, so they're categorized in different – I almost said categorized in different categories. That's the kind of verbal shenanigans you get here, guys. All right.
That's the verbal and verbal shenanigans.
Yeah.
All right, Scott. First lineup. Alex Trebek versus Grant Imahara from the Mythbusters.
That was sad, man. Grant Imahara. Like, I kind of went through a phase where I watched that show probably like around college age. It would be on like, it would be on the constant like marathons on Discovery Channel and stuff like that. Seemed like a nice guy, but I'm sorry, Grant, but how do I let you trump Alex Trebek? I mean, the stories that guy must have and the legacy he left behind and the amount of years he put in on the job and just how much of a living room figure he was in daily conversation and in everyone's lives. To me, this one's not that hard. I got to go with Alex Trebek.
Probably going the same way with you, too. And love Mythbusters, but it's hard to say no to Alex Trebek. Yeah. Okay. Next up, movie director Joel Schumacher.
I didn't even know he died. Wow.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. He did St. Elmo's Fire, Lost Boys, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin.
A lot of stuff.
Yep. He's up against Roy Horn, who is from Siegfried and Roy.
Oh.
And a little bonus, if he wins, keep in mind, Siegfried goes into next year's competition, so you can bring them back together, Scott. Siegfried just died today.
I saw that. All right. Now, fitting for the show, like, as far as the podcast, like, Roy seems like right down the verbal shenanigans alley. Like, right in the kind of weird... off kilter kind of job and whatnot, like some of the guests we've had. But Joel Schumacher seems like just a titan in the industry. And selfishly, I think Joel Schumacher could get us like a lot of really cool guests if the interview went well. So I'm sorry, Roy. You're not going to see Siegfried next year. I'm going with Joel Schumacher.
I probably went with Roy on there, but I like you talking. You know? And for our listeners, what I give Scott is he can bring him back for any reason, whether it's for the world, personal reasons, bring him back at a certain age, anything that will entertain us. He's God. He makes all the choices for all the weird reasons.
A lot of times my choices are like, who would be great for the podcast? Yeah.
All right. Okay. Carl Reiner Ooh. Famous television producer.
Big names coming right out of the gate.
Versus Congressman John Lewis.
God.
Civil rights activist.
Wow, this is a tough one because I feel like I'm a dick if I answer one way. But but Carl Reiner is like comedy like legend. You know what I mean? Like I believe he's great friends with Mel Brooks and all them guys.
Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. Mr. Lewis, I'm sorry, man. I'm really sorry. I apologize for this. I know you've done so many amazing things for society. People are probably like, "Are you kidding me?" but as a it's so funny because comedy's been dead for so long. It's like, as a former comic, I just think the stories on Reiner would be unbelievable. So selfishly, which I'm God, so I got to make some selfish decisions. I'm going with Reiner. That was a tough one. Right. That was a brutal one. That was probably the hardest one yet.
And we're only three in. Final one in this category.
Now, when you make these, are you going for the hardest matchups or do you randomize it? Like, give us a little insight into the producer's head here.
I kind of look at the scenario, like sometimes I try to match it up like in, like if they're in the same field or whatever, but I felt this year I kind of mixed things up with like names just to make it interesting. Mm-hmm. Like some of them, because sometimes as I do it, if I just try to be like, okay, a congressman versus a congressman, it's like, all right, one is like more obvious than the other where right. It just eliminates them by default. So I try to get some thought into
that one was brutal. I'm not gonna lie, that one was really hard. That's like when we played FMK with the worst women ever and you were like, all right Scott, go ahead, make this entertaining and good. I'm like, oh boy.
All right, last one in this conference, Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh god.
Versus Regis Philbin.
All right, this time. Oh man, that's tough too. Like, but I think this time people might be a little happier with me. How do you turn down Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Listen, one thing we noticed last year on the show was that we didn't have an extreme amount of females on the show. We had plenty, but not compared to men. And imagine we dropped a bomb like, guys, not only do we have a special guest, but we brought her back from the dead. We would have 90 million downloads in day one. Like, it's easily. Not even a question. It would blow the internet out of the... So selfishly, once, like, yeah, people would be like, oh, I want to hear Regis again, but what is he going to do? Like, ha, 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 la, 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 I'm dead. Like, Ruth has a lot of good stories and has done so much for the planet, if you will, if not America. So I got to go Ruth here. I got to go Ruth.
All right.
I can't kill off John Lewis and Ruth in one swipe.
All these social justice people are like, how dare you? And you're like, did you listen to last week with Carl Reiner? It was freaking amazing.
Right, exactly.
No. All right.
Carl Reiner and Kimbo Slice on the same podcast. Awesome.
All right, Scott. A, B, or C?
A. We're going to go with A. We'll do the tail ends. The book ends.
We got sports here, Scotty. Sports. First matchup. Kobe Bryant versus Howard Finkel.
I think this was the easiest one. Listen, Howard Finkel, God rest his soul, probably a very interesting guy, but how do you not talk to, what do you want to say, Berlew, top, wherever you want to put him, top 1 through 10 basketball players of all time. Kind of no debating right there. To me, that's kind of a quick answer, like a quick pow. I'm going Kobe Bryant.
All right.
What next about you? One. You're a big wrestling guy. Would you go with Finkel?
Finkel would have interesting stories, but I think to talk to a legend, I would prefer Kobe.
Yeah. Even
to go like on his last 2 years where he was like struggling and talking about that night he dropped 60.
Yeah.
I could have like an hour long conversation.
Didn't he drop 81 or something like that once? Something crazy. Yeah. Can you imagine being at a bar and being like hanging with your buddies, having a beer, and they're like, you're like, yeah, I had the opportunity to talk to Kobe Bryant, but I chose Howard Finkel. And everyone's like, are you kidding me, man?
Dude, when the Fink calls, you answer, all right?
Yeah.
All right. Legendary Dolphins coach Don Shula.
Wow.
Versus the guy who used to hold the record for the longest field goal, a great story of handicaps, Tom Dempsey.
Yeah, half a foot, right?
Yep, half a foot, half an arm.
I bet you by now he's got like a quarter of a foot. Sorry. I'm sorry. No, I'm not. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. Good matchup. Obviously, would love to talk to any of them. But again, to me, one is a Titan and one is a really interesting story. Legend in his own. But again, you're watching one of those NFL best of the top 10 coaches of all time. Don Shula is going to be on there every single time. Like, it's going to take 300 years until someone's like, Shula's like 20th. Like, he's not going to go anywhere for a while. He's going to be with the Parcells and the Belichicks and, you know, Lombardis. Like, those guys aren't going anywhere, so it's got to be Shula. Like, Shula and Kobe Bryant as opposed to the Fink and Tom Dempsey. I feel like...
Sadly, the Fink and Tom Dempsey sounds like most of our years in podcasting.
So I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Tom. I'm sorry for the joke, and I'm sorry for not picking you. But
all right,
Shula.
Scott, legendary pitcher of your beloved team, Tom Seaver, versus soccer superstar Diego Maradona.
Wow. This is a monster matchup. Holy crap. Wow. Okay, Tom Seaver. Arguably one of the pitchers that's never brought up enough as far as how good he was. You know, you always get the, I'm trying to think who people bring up all the time.
Nolan Ryan.
You bring up, what's his face from the Dodgers?
Sandy Koufax.
You always get the, even like Pedro. I feel like Tom Seaver's not brought up enough. Like, that trade from when obviously this was a little before my time, but apparently that trade was so ill received when the Mets got rid of him. And then they brought him back eventually, but he was in his twilight of his career. Tom was like the guy, like, and you look at his numbers, they're insane. Oh God. I don't know. So who's the matchup? It's Tom
Seaver and Argentinian soccer superstar Diego Maradona.
Now Maradona is literally the top, as far as outside of this country, like legends. It's like the original Ronaldo, Messi, Maradona. And Maradona was like a famous for his partying and his coke binges, and I hate to do this to Tom Seaver, I really do, but as a coach and a lover of soccer, I'm a lover of baseball too. But I think when you talk of the weight of these guys worldwide, like if we had Maradona on the podcast, we'd get international fame, international. Results. Tom Seaver, we'd get nothing but our country, basically. I'm so sorry, Tommy Terrific, but I'm going with Maradona in a shocking pick.
I'm a little surprised you went with that, but I like your logic in going into that.
Mm-hmm.
These are tough this year.
Yep.
Final matchup in sports. The only pitcher to throw a perfect game in the World Series, Don Larsen, versus legendary running back Gale Sayers.
Oof. See, this one, I don't have an attachment to either one. Like, there's no, like, kind of personal thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect game would obviously be amazing to talk about. But I feel like Gale Sayers has this iconic clout about him, especially in Chicago and whatnot. And I you still hear his name as one of the greatest athletes of all time to play in a tough one and not with any major reason, just because this one sticks out. I'm going to go with Gale Sayers. I'm going to go with Gale.
Right.
No, I that one was probably the most like kind of even with no emotional attachment to either guy. So I'm sorry, but I guess I'll go with Gale.
I got you. Well, either one's a good one to pick right there, so I don't blame you, need a direction.
All right, Mike. I guess I'll go with bracket C next.
C. All right. We are going into the acting category, Scott. Dawn Wells, Marianne from Gilligan's Island.
Right.
Versus Spartacus, Kirk Douglas.
Oof. I feel like, I don't know, man. This is tough because, again, this is not like an emotional connection. So I'm just going to go by my gut that the better chat would be talking about Gilligan's Island, this kind of like weird, low budget, kind of like, it was kind of like a kitschy kind of show, right? All like the
underground
whole
hit.
Yeah, I guess like, and like kind of filming it and what that was like when, like, I feel like that was like being an independent movie and then it just taking off. Like, I feel like that's where I feel like Spartacus was like, we know this is going to be huge. Cause it was like, that had to be like a big budget thing at the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with Gilligan's Island. I'm going to go with Marianne.
Dawn Wells. Okay.
Yep.
From Seinfeld, Jerry Stiller versus another comedy actor, Fred Willard.
Wow. I got to go Jerry Stiller here, man. I got to go. I'm a giant Seinfeld fan. That guy, he also still cracks me up. Like, you know, like certain things don't hold up. And like Seinfeld mostly holds up. There's still a couple things that are like, okay. But Jerry Stiller's character is always hilarious. He's hilarious in like things like Zoolander. I know. Yeah, I'm just going to go. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going with Jerry Stiller. I'm not going to explain all right. That one. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's a hard one, but I agree with that. Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, God.
Versus Tommy Tiny Lister. He was the bully in the Friday movies. He was Zeus in No Holds Barred.
Yo, Debo. I mean, I'm sorry, Mr. Lister, but I feel like Chadwick Boseman. You know, every year we do this, we have a conversation about, you know, celebrity deaths don't usually make me sad. Usually, I'm like, ah, that sucks. You know, like they're older, mm-hmm. whatever. There was a few. Like, I told you that Tom Petty made me sad because I really went through a big Tom Petty stage, and I always thought he was kind of like, listen, he's respected. Everyone knows him, but I still never thought he got the credit that he, and he was playing live shows, and apparently his live shows were still that amazing. And he was, what, 60-something?
Somewhere in that range,
yeah. And he died. And he was one of the ones I felt like sad about. Like, Chadwick Boseman died. I was on a Zoom call with my friends. I found out And I was texting you after that. I'm like, Chadwick Boseman died. Like, and immediately your first thought is like, okay, this guy in his 30s or whatever it is, maybe he was early 40s, I'm not sure. Healthy looking from what we know, right? From what we see. Seemed to be on the precipice of his career. Like, I think Black Panther was just the tip. Like, a superhero movie is amazing, right? Yeah, they're superheroes. But I think he would have gone on to do roles like Denzel and the way Leonardo DiCaprio does roles. Like, he seemed like he had those acting chops that just cannot be found in different people. And the tragic story of him, he was gone so too soon. Like I feel like superhero movies is something like as an actor you want to put in your back pocket and be like, I did that. But I feel like he would have went on to do so many amazing things. Like he could,
he did a great job as Jackie Robinson.
Fantastic job. Yep. And that's like kind of an example. I think he would have took more of those roles. And then, yeah, did the Black Panther stuff, but he would have done, I think he could have played a bunch of he played someone else really cool, but I don't want to like Google it. Little Richard. Yep. He did a fantastic job with that. I think he could
have. Spoiler, he might be coming up later.
Oh, ooh, Chadwick Boseman again? You put him in two brackets?
You'll see.
To me, this one's a no-brainer. Chadwick Boseman, like, we just watched one of the Marvel movies. I had Civil War on the other day, which, by the way, is not a Captain America movie at all. They should have just called that Avengers 3. Great movie. Yeah. It was fun. We both looked at each other and we're just like, this sucks. You know, like, and you forget how much of a role he had in them. He had a big role in the Civil War movie. It's interesting, but it sucked, man. Everybody, like when I was on a Zoom call with like 8 of my friends, like you joined the one night. So you saw what we do, which is basically just drink beer and talk shit. But everybody, it like took the wind out of it took the wind out of the sails. Everyone's like, oh, and everyone immediately goes to their phones and like Googles it. Like, is this true? Like, is this true? Oh my God, this is terrible. So Chadwick Boseman, no doubt.
Yeah. Absolutely. Final one in this category, David Prowse, who was the actor who played Darth Vader, the man in the suit.
Yeah.
Versus Sean Connery, 007.
Sean Connery.
Yep.
Listen, like, the guy in the suit, really cool. But how do you not... I mean, Sean Connery's going to... I mean, if you're taking the top 5 or 6 in this whole tournament, he's got to be up there as one of the biggest names. Like, I mean, that guy probably has a million stories to tell. A million stories. David Prowse is like, yeah, I was Darth Vader.
I kind of figured as much, but I didn't know who could really set up
Not only that, we'd interview him, right? And what are all our questions going to be? What was it like to be Darth Vader? So when you got the Darth Vader, and then we'd be like, you went on to do some sitcom or whatever, but what was it like to be Darth Vader? You know?
So I see you played a waiter in a movie 3 months later. How's that being a waiter?
Yeah. Did you research it? No brainer. Sean Connery.
Okay. All right. Final category, Scott. Music.
Ooh, that's going to be a tough one.
Neil Peart, the drummer from Rush, versus Frankie Minnelli, the drummer from Quiet Riot.
This is some people worship the 80s, like hair metal era. Was there talent there? Of course there was. Was there some really good songs, like some party song? But I never treasured that era of music like a lot of people do. I think it was like a fun time, but I think the 70s were a way better time in music. And then I think like the grunge era was a way better time in music also. So the whole hair metal thing, Quiet Riot, like Come On, Feel the Noise. I don't know. Neil Peart was an all-time drummer. I'm not even the biggest Rush fan, But they are a big influence on Coheed and Cambria, which is a big, you know, we had two of the guys on here. And Neil Peart was one of the all-time drummers of all time. No question, Neil Peart.
Gotcha. All right. Charlie Daniels, The Devil Went Down to Georgia, versus the gambler, Kenny Rogers.
Devil did go down to Georgia about, what, 3 years ago?
Something like that.
Kenny Rogers. You know, one time I was working in the mall at the Great Train Store. It was my first gig. And Kenny Rogers was singing like Christmas songs right outside the in the mall in the little like where Santa would be. He was doing Christmas songs there.
Really like the weird. Literal Kenny Rogers?
Like literally Kenny Rogers. Yep. He got hired to do a gig at the mall. I don't know, man. It's kind of a no-brainer again for me. So I'm going with option A.
Charlie Daniels?
Charlie Daniels, man. That guy's got to have a ton of stories, too, coming from the South, you know, writing that song, being in that whole, like, Southern rock thing going on, like, and just having that hit. Did you know he did Devil Went Down to Georgia, too? Ugh.
No, I did not.
Shouldn't know that. You're going to... When you listen to it, you're going to be like, oh, God.
There's a reason why songs don't have sequels.
Yeah. In the meantime, while you bring up the next one, I'm going to bring up the Devil Go Down to Georgia lyrics, too.
Okay. Next one up, Bonnie Pointer, one of the original Pointer Sisters, versus Little Richard.
Oh, my God. I feel like the music category is so strong. There's so many strong names. Little Richard... is one of the reasons we have rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Literally one of the reasons we see guys doing the things they do on stage and front men. Like I'm going to say if there's no Little Richard, there's no Freddie Mercury. There's there's no Axl Rose. There's no true front men after him. Maybe even the Beatles. Like there's no front man like Little Richard. You look at that guy, he was a lunatic on stage. He brought this passion, probably coke enraged passion, but he brought passion. The fact that he lasted to 2020 is amazing. No brainer for me, Little Richard. Little Richard would be one of them. I mean, I feel like we talked to Bobby Rush, and I think he said he played with Little Richard. Just talking about that was an honor. I can't even imagine talking to Little Richard.
Awesome. All right. Final one of the first round, Scott. Eddie Van Halen versus Peter Green, the founding member of Fleetwood Mac.
It's got to be Eddie Van Halen. I mean, he's a guitar player that changed the way people play guitar. Van Halen, not one of my favorite bands, but there's so many good songs. I mean, just the undeniable talent. He's like, you know, like people love to hate on Tom Brady.
Yep.
Which I don't understand, honestly. Like, I guess he's like a little pretty boy and he's got the model wife. And he is literally, we were talking the other day, me and you, Evan, he has 31 wins in the playoffs. 31 wins in a play and 9 Super Bowl appearances. Like, why are we even debating this anymore? Why are we debating it? He's the greatest of all time at that position. He's a leader. He wins game. That's kind of how I feel about Eddie Van Halen. I like a bunch of Van Halen songs. Do I deep dive into Van Halen? But no, I know how talented Eddie Van Halen is. It's a no-brainer. He's that good. So, Eddie Van Halen.
All right, Scott. We're down to our final 16 here. So, let's get right into it. I'm going to just go right into the sports category. Kobe Bryant versus Don Shula.
It's got to be Kobe Bryant for me. As much as Don Shula would be amazing, the coach... Coaches are cool, right? Coaches are amazing, but the players are the ones that make it happen. So... How do you not talk to Kobe Bryant? How do you be like, imagine we had a scheduling conflict. We're like, yeah, Mike, both guys are available at 8 o'clock tonight. We can only get one. And this is the only time they're available. I think we'd both be like, All right, Kobe Bryant's got to happen.
That's logical. That's logical. How about Diego Maradona versus Gale Sayers?
Can you just say Diego Maradona a bunch of times for me? It makes me real happy.
Why?
Not Diego Maradona. I mean, you sound like Jeff Foxworthy saying Diego Maradona. Maradona, hands down, like I said, top five names in the sport of soccer, which is a.k.a. the biggest sport in the world. No question.
Don Wells versus Jerry Stiller.
I got to go with Jerry Stiller. Jerry Stiller's got that old, like, there's a lot of things Jerry Stiller did even before Seinfeld where he became like a household name. Like, Jerry Stiller was in the comedy world for a long time. I got to go. Oh, yeah. Like, I feel like the Gilligan's Island talk would get, you know, after a while.
Yeah. Don Wells would be a one-time talk. Jerry Stiller is, let's bring you back another time.
Please come on once every week. We'll have you on. So
we will be the Jerry Stiller podcast. Yeah. We have no issues.
Not a problem. If Jerry Stiller's estate is out there and they want to sponsor the podcast, we're open.
We are. Chadwick Boseman versus Sean Connery.
Oh my God. This is two guys who should be in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. I feel like either way, if people are listening, I'm gonna get heat for no matter what answer I give. Thank God nobody's listening. So I'm sorry, Chadwick. I'm really sorry, Chadwick. Based on the amount of things the guy has done and legendary things he's done, and to become an icon in people's vocabulary, Chadwick Boseman didn't get there yet. I gotta go Sean Connery lived a long life of stories and partying and being interesting. Chadwick died too soon, but mm-hmm. I got to go Sean Connery.
That's an upset for me. I figured he'd be in the final four minimum.
If he wasn't against Sean Connery, 100%. Chadwick could have won the whole tournament depending how he fell in the brackets. It's like sometimes the Duke loses, man. So sometimes Duke doesn't reach the Final Four because they get like a weird team from Virginia that's hot. Sorry, Sean Connery.
Carl Reiner versus Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
What a matchup. All right.
The debate that we have every week.
Yeah, I know. That was the name of our podcast, but we changed it to Verbal Shenanigans. I'm going to go Ruth Bader Ginsburg on this one. Reiner, I would love to talk to that one time, you know, about his comedy experience and his life and whatever. But Ruth, how could you even sum up a 1 hour interview? Never mind what we usually do, like a half hour, 40. How could you even try to get it all in? So
yeah, she a virtue of knowledge and a virtue of experience.
RBG.
Yeah. Okay. Alex Trebek versus Joel Schumacher.
I'm going Trebek right away. Schumacher, again, I would say I'd talk to him. I'd get the big movie questions out of the way. Get the big, amazing things you worked on. But Trebek, like, you could spend, I feel like you could spend a year. You could have a podcast called The Year with Alex Trebek, and it would be amazingly successful. Trebek.
Little Richard versus Eddie Van Halen.
Woo-hoo, big guns going out of here. I'm sorry, Eddie. I'm sorry, Eddie. You're one of the most talented people to ever pick up an instrument. You're probably more talented than Little Richard, but you didn't invent rock and roll, which essentially you can say Little Richard did. Little Richard for me.
Final one in this round, Neil Peart versus Charlie Daniels.
Interesting one. I don't have a like a super allegiance to either one of these guys. Everyone loves The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Everyone loves that Charlie Daniels badass kind of thing. Neil Peart, one of the best musicians to ever do it. Gut telling me is I'm going to go with Neil Peart. I feel like he would be like getting Victor Wooten on the show, which we've had on twice. He's just like a virtuoso of that instrument, and I just think he maybe deserves it more. Charlie Daniels Band, other than Devil Went Out, Down to Georgia, what other songs are you really like putting on your playlist?
Well, apparently The Devil Went Down to Georgia too.
Oh yeah, I have the lyrics here, by the way. Devil Went Down to Georgia too. They made it in 1979. We'll save that for a different podcast.
Yeah, that sounds like something we need a little time to decipher.
Oh, yeah, break it down.
All right, Scott, we got 8 people here. Let's see what we got. The finals of the sports conference: Kobe Bryant versus Diego Maradona.
All right. You said it, and my gut told like it flared one way. So I'm going to go with my gut. I didn't think Kobe was the greatest individual. clearly, Maradona wasn't either, but Maradona kind of embraced it, and he was embraced for his party
lifestyle.
You know, yeah, lifestyle, crazy coach, amazing player. Kobe, we're sad we lost him. Also, we lost him way too young. Maradona, also too young, but Kobe... Arguably, the Sixers could have signed him, and you would be like, oh, Kobe's going to call him off the bench and put in 15 points tonight. You know, like you still believed Kobe had it. But for world view and everything that goes with that, I'm going to take Maradona, and Kobe's going to have to go back in the helicopter for a little bit.
Wow.
Yep.
That's another upset.
Yep.
Wouldn't I have called that?
Yep.
All right. Jerry Stiller versus Sean Connery.
All right. This is where Jerry's run ends.
A little Gonzaga run there.
Yeah. Yeah. He made it to the Elite Eight. A lot of people were betting on him, but they all lose when they hit the Dukes and the North Carolinas and all that. Jerry Stiller is a Gonzaga. Sean Connery is a Duke. I mean, he's legendary. Got to take Sean Connery.
Alex Trebek versus Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
All right. Well, gut says Trebek. We had him on the show like 3 times. Jeopardy talk is starting to get a little faded, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to get a little bit like, what else do you do, Trebek? What's
Canada like?
Yeah, what do you like to cook? It starts to get a little weak, but RBG could be, she probably has stories forever. So I got to go with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
And finally, Neil Peart versus Little Richard.
Again? We had Neil Peart on twice now, 3 times. How did you play drum? Like, everyone's like, You had him on a second time? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But you had Little Richard as a call-in guest? Like, hey, let's see what's going on with Little Richard. It feels like he would just be like, woo, I'm just partying. Like, I feel like Little Richard would be, like, kind of a Lenny Dykstra-esque kind of guest. Little Richard.
Okay. Scott, our final 4.
Yeah.
This is pretty big here. Who you got? Diego Maradona versus Sean Connery. Like, just saying those 2 names, I'm like, the stories are infinite.
Sean Connery was a great actor. Phenomenal actor. Did a lot of amazing things. Maradona transcended the sport. And in the spirit of the podcast and interviewing and some crazy guy who could tell you anything, I'm going to have to get rid of Sean Connery right now. I'm going to have to get rid of Sean Connery, which is crazy. I'm going to have Maradona as a frequent guest on the podcast, calling in. Like, it'll be a strip club, just calling the show. Like, it'll be coaching on the sideline. He might call into the show. It doesn't matter. I want his big, flowing, mullety kind of hair on the podcast. He would become, we could become best friends, possibly.
Awesome. How about Little Richard versus Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Arguably the hardest one, because you got a guy, a black guy, at least a queer guy, sexuality was up in the air and whatnot, in the South, who brought rock and roll to the masses as that guy, basically, right? And then you have Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a woman getting to the Supreme Court that was basically unheard of. So these are transcendental people. I got to go with my gut as far as calling into the podcast and being entertaining every single time you have them on. Mm-hmm. I have to go with Little Richard. I cannot believe I'm killing off Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's, yep. I mean, she made it to the Final Four. I figure she'd have a tough test in the Final Four with anybody in the brackets, but...
Oh, man. That's hard. That's a hard, hard one, man.
Oof. All right, Scott. We went through 30 other people. We've had some tough decisions, and I'm guessing this is going to be pretty tough because you've been basing this off of who's going to be the craziest guest that we could constantly bring back.
Yeah,
on the
this is like looking into a mirror, kind of. Like, these are two guys who are looking into a mirror.
Mirror images, different fields.
Right.
Scott, who are you bringing back out of 2020? Is it Diego Maradona or is it Little Richard?
I think I have my answer. Both
guys. Before you give the answer, out of curiosity, was this person, did you think they would be your winner?
Not even.
Think of everybody.
Not even a chance. In my head, I thought Chadwick Boseman would be really close. I thought he would be really close, but he came up against Sean Connery, which I think if we're taking legacy into effect, as a factor, I just think he had more of a legacy to talk about. There was a couple names along the way that I thought the same thing. There was weird upsets, but no, I actually didn't. It's funny because you kind of refreshed me that Little Richard died this year. I knew Diego Maradona was going to be on there. I kind of forgot about Little Richard. Ironically, I think that guy went through so much adversity and crap, and I still can't think of his experience, like, coming up in the the racist South and coming out with that music and getting, like, literally where his music is still played today. Now, Maradona is still worshipped by all of the world. But at this point, I have to go with America. And I have to go with rock and roll. I'm a big music guy. I'm a giant soccer guy, too. Unfortunately, Maradona just missed the cut. And in a surprise victory, a strong showing, like a number four seed maybe, I have to say where his seed was, he just plowed through the competition. I'm going with Little Richard, man.
Wow.
Little Richard is my pick as someone I would want to bring back to life, because I would love to pick his brain for like
hours.
Hours. I just think someone's going to play him again in like a biopic and just be, it's going to be amazing. Like the documentaries that are come out about him, like all the stuff, it's going to be really, like if you thought the Green Book was good, the Little Richard movie is going to be amazing if it's casted well. So to my own surprise, Little Richard takes it down.
Well, Scott, it was a tough year this last year, but I think you put a lot of thought into these brackets, and I appreciate you bringing back one person and telling the other 31, you know, you can stay where you're at, but that's your choice. And Scott, we thank you for another year of showing us your God complex.
Now, Berlu, like, let's turn it on you. Obviously, you didn't have to go through the brackets, but if you could pick, like, a top four, or like, who were you thinking? Who were you thinking would have won?
Like, my final four probably been Kobe versus Chadwick, and on the other side, probably Alex Trebek versus Eddie Van Halen.
All right, good one. I feel like you just waged war between the black and white community, like in like civil wars between, okay, like you're gonna ask the black community to go between Chadwick Boseman and Kobe, and you're gonna ask the white people to go against Trebek. yeah, and Sean Connery. Like, who would, like, you're really turning you were turning them on each other. Now, who would you pick to win it all? If you just had a floor pick, just number one.
Probably Boseman. Yeah. I mean, I think he affected the most, like you said, just like you said, I remember you texted me, I'm like, wait a minute, who? What? Wait a minute, what? No. Mm-hmm. No. Look, yep. Like, it literally showed Izzy, and I'm like, no. And that, it kind of like these days, the second somebody says you don't, well, now we got to go on the TV, and until I see it on TV, it can't be true. And
right.
Until I see it on Facebook, that can't be true. And it was just, I mean, he was a great actor. I mean, like I said, I loved him in 42. He did the biopic of Little Richard, obviously Black Panther. And like, his final role, he got skinnier, and like people are mocking him with the crack panther remarks.
Yeah. Where
he stayed regal through the whole thing. He could have just came out, guys, be quiet, I'm dying here.
Yeah.
But he literally just sat back and said, I want to keep this private. I don't want to be a big deal. I think
you would have liked to see what he went on to do, basically.
Oh, yeah. Like, you knew he had range. He wasn't a person who's like, oh, he can only do this type of role. You know, if you just like, hey, we got a horror movie coming up, he'd be like, that's weird, I'm going to tackle that kind of guy, you know?
Totally. I get it. He would have been, he was up there for me too. But hey, Little Richard's still alive, so he can meet Tom Petty and John Glenn and all those guys. Berlu, let's get out of here. Anything to promote?
Well, I think I'm going to promote, since we talked to a local brewery, I'm going to bring up my local brewery, Halfway Crooks, here in Georgia. They come out with a new brew called Slow Jams. It's got a can that looks like the old NBA Jams kind of flow.
Oh, you know they sold me right away.
Yeah, and it's a collaboration with Portrait Coffee. It's a Baltic-style porter brewed with Portrait Tony. I've been there plenty of times. They got absolutely delicious food, great German style beers. As I've brought up many times, my wife is not a huge brewery person, but she loves going there. If you're still worried about with everything going on. They have social distancing with contactless menus and your own table. Everything they do there is amazing, and I look forward to going there every time. They're right in the heart of Atlanta by Georgia State Stadium, halfway Crooks Brewery.
All right, and I'll promote – I just want to promote someone that's been with us for a long time, and they've been like, if you see our Twitter, they're responsible for it, and we've been part of them for a long time, and they don't get enough shout-outs, so I'm going to promote the BS Podcast Network. They do a good job of putting our stuff out there, doing the work that me and Mike don't want to do. They help us get our content out there. And if you're a podcast looking to be on a bunch of, get some exposure, get some listens, they bumped our listens up a whole bunch. So I'm going to promote the BS Podcast Network. Go check them out. Other than that, guys, that's it. I want to thank Tammy Lane for coming on the show. What a great guest. Other than that, please listen to us. Please follow us and subscribe to the podcast. And leave us a review. Life is funny. Laugh at it. And keep the wind at your back.
Rest in peace, Tony.
You want to say it, you want to say it again?
Nah, I'm good for what I did.
Later, guys. The banker with a motor car. The little children laughing him down.